How many people set themselves up for intuitive, doubtful thoughts in stressful situations? Hello and welcome to The Swim Brief. I'm Chris DeSantis. On this podcast, I go deep on things that come up in my coaching. I'm an expert in positive psychology, a former and recovering swim coach, and somebody that spends too much time thinking about all this. Today, I want to talk to you about something that is related to a topic I've often spoken about, but I want to tackle a different aspect of it. And that aspect is doubt. I want to talk about doubt, what it is, what purpose it serves, and how I see a lot of people that I coach unconsciously and unproductively feeding their own doubt. And before I get into it, I'm going to give an example at the end of how I work my own process. And this is based off, you know, a process I work with people that I coach as well. But I want to make sure that everybody's listening knows that I'm actually not trying to be prescriptive at the end of it. I'm providing an example for you so you can see something that I've done. But the real magic in this is understanding how all of this works. And then through trial and error, through cooperation with other people, through conversation and dialogue with other people, whether it be coach, athlete, coach, et cetera, you come up with your own sort of application of this. I think it's actually really, really important that you do that because a lot of this stuff, if you just try to copy paste mine, it's not going to work for you in the same way that it works for me. So let's back all the way up. And from the start, I want to talk about what purpose it serves, because doubt, that is, because our silly monkey brains often want to categorize things quickly into good or bad. And doubt, no doubt, gets sorted into a bad category, especially in sports. For that, even, let's define what doubt is for what we're going to discuss, right? Because we should operate from a shared definition at the outset of this. Doubt is basically just thought or thoughts that go, maybe not. So, you know, you're weighing whether or not you're going to be able to do something and you think, maybe not. Maybe I can't. It's a thought about future outcome that seeks to back up that the future outcome is not likely. That's it. That's what doubt is. It's important to note that it is a thought and not a feeling. So guys, already I'm getting into talking through this, and let me, because I don't always do a great job doing this, let me explain how you should use what I'm talking about here. When you think about doubt in your own life, examine it with all the criteria I'm about to give you. Think about a situation where you're going like, I'm experiencing a lot of doubt right now. Ask yourself, what are my doubtful thoughts? That's actual doubt. Separate that from a feeling that you're having, because the feeling is something different, right? You're experiencing something emotionally, but that's not the same thing. Just being able to separate that from what you're thinking, okay, then you have the opportunity to change some of the patterns in what you're thinking. And, you know, essentially with positive psychology, with any, I think, halfway decent psychology, you're doing cognitive training. You're working on your thoughts. And so if you cannot distinguish what is a thought from the beginning, it's a fruitless endeavor. Doubt is a thought. And it's not a feeling, although doubt comes intuitively to all of us. That's the real trick that comes, you know, is that like doubt is constructed in the cognitive part of our brain, but we're not aware of our feelings being constructed. And so on an experiential level, on a perception level, you think of those two things happening at the same time. And that's why it's very hard to separate thoughts from feelings. Okay. The other reason that it's important to separate these is that feelings are immutable, at least directly, right? You get in situations, those emotions are provoked, and that is what it is. Okay. And you may have a default thought process, and by changing your thought patterns, you may find yourself responding differently emotionally in comparable situations. But it's because you've actually changed the experience of what you're happening, right? So that, you know, the same experience will lead to the same emotional situation. And a lot of us get stuck in patterns where something happens and we feel something, and then we intuitively think away and we end up in that situation over and over again. That's just your mind giving you opportunities to get better. Right? It's going to keep presenting you with more or less the same situation until you find a way to level up. So what we're talking about here is all about what you need to understand in order to level up. And thoughts are ripe for training. Thoughts are trainable, right? They're like your heart, your cardiovascular system, your biceps. You know, they are trainable. Is it hard work to train them? Heck yeah, it's really hard. Which is why I often, again, I don't go for prescriptive solutions, because, you know, so often prescriptive solutions are like, do this. Imagine if making your biceps stronger was just like, just do this. Right? It's little things, slow progress, okay, and understanding what's actually going on. So in a sports context, doubt is often framed around pessimistic thoughts or, quote, self-limiting beliefs. That is, I think a lot of people look at doubt and they see it as a performance limiter. And the reason I want to bring that up as a categorization is that I think that often framing things through traditional psychological lens is really not that helpful in a sports context. And what I mean by a traditional lens is that it looks at something like doubt and views it as a problem. I've talked often about the sort of the arc of psychological history, right? But at the foundation of modern psychology is all about problems and how to solve them. And look, I will say this 1,000 times so people don't get it twisted that I'm talking shit about traditional psychology or therapy or anything like that. Not true. Plenty of good time to work on your problems. But I think that is distinct from what we're often doing as coaches and what we're doing in sports. We're not always problem solving. People don't necessarily always have problems. Or it's not, I think, in a performance aspect, very good to look at a lot of things that's going on in the mind as a problem. You know, like I hear so many people say, this athlete really has a problem, you know, in meets. And I'm thinking, this person's a national level competitor. They don't have a problem. They just want to be a little bit better, right? So how does that description of it as a problem usually go? It'll, you know, from a person speaking about themselves, well, I doubted myself, therefore I made the outcome that I wanted less likely. And let me give you another problem with a problem, with a problem-based analysis of this. Okay. What do you want to do with a problem? You want to solve it. What's the ultimate solution? Eliminate the problem, right? Eradicate the problem. You know, so I hear people say, I just want to eliminate doubts from my mind. What a crock of shit. First off, I don't advise that. Second, if you've been listening long enough, you know that I don't advocate any policy of wholesale trying to obliterate thoughts from your mind. Because guess what? It's impossible. But I promised we would get to actually defining what purpose doubt serves. So let me get there. Think about, once again, as I've asked you to do many times, the long arc of humanity. Most of our default psychological processes were built with survival in mind. Therefore, doubt was an essential ingredient. Because without it, we'd be trying to jump over 40-foot chasms, thinking, I can make it, without any doubts in our mind. Okay. It's supposed to make us check ourselves before we do something really stupid and die. So doubt, I think a lot of people get it twisted with pessimism. I actually think it's distinct from pessimism. And I'll tell you exactly how. And you'll learn something about pessimism along the way because they get confused. Pessimism is actually doubt in some situations and not in others. Okay? Let me explain. One of the key factors in pessimism is whether or not you predict in the future that an event you're feeling one way about will happen again. So if that event, if you experience something that feels really good on an emotional level, on a sensorial level, you feel good about it. Pessimism actually doubts that it will happen again. Pessimism, as it relates to doubt, moats doubt. You just got lucky, pessimist says. Not likely to get lucky again. That was a one-time thing. Right? In contrast, pessimism, in situations you feel awful about that are sensorially terrible feeling, are remarkably low on doubt. They seek to be pretty definitive. This always happens to me. And will definitely happen again. That's not a doubtful statement, right? That's what the pessimistic devil purrs on your shoulder when something really bad is happening, right? Actually eradicates almost doubt. So let's return once again to the purpose of doubt because we're getting closer to actually understanding how it works, not the dysfunction of doubt. Doubt actually, and here's a really cool thing, that I've discovered through my coaching. Doubt scales with ambition. People don't realize this, okay? They think that when they perceive themselves at a higher level of achievement, at a higher level of success, they think that that is going to be a situation with less doubt. No, doubt scales with ambition. The harder, the more you achieve, the higher you set your goals, the more doubt you're going to have to reckon with. Because the mind is instinctively drawn to ramp up doubt. Remember, it doesn't want you jumping over 40-foot chasms thinking, I can make it. It doesn't want you to die. And it's not evolved to understand that the ambitious stuff that you're doing, because you have so much emotion invested in it, is not life or death. Okay, it perceives it as such. So as I said, I don't advocate trying to eliminate things because it doesn't work. But the other reason why I don't advocate it is putting energy into something that doesn't work makes it very hard for you to do what actually works. So what does actually work? Well, what actually works is continuing to build out your infrastructure beyond the point where it is actually dysfunctional. Because often, it doesn't even matter if it's often, as I'll explain in a second, you have the foundation for something that really works and you just haven't finished building it yet. One of my greatest mentors I've cited a long time on this podcast, Milton Elms, he taught me so many things that don't necessarily come across as bite-sized takeaway advice. It's conceptual knowledge, right? That once you understand, it changes the way that you view things. So I was asking him why, you know, he had stuff that he was asking people to do in the water, and he would essentially create new words for it. And I was thinking like, well, that kind of looks like something I recognize. So why did you give it a new word instead of calling it the thing that I recognize? He's like, first off, I don't want them to do the thing you recognize. I want them to try and do something new. So if I use a word that you already have a definition of, you cannot delete your pre-perception that's in your mind. As I said, and you know, I've been talking with some earlier audiences and they go, well, I beg to differ. Their brain has no delete function. I mean, it does have a passive delete function. You get older, you forget stuff, but you can't consciously delete stuff from your mind. Right? And so whatever you're going to build functionally in terms of doubt is you're going to put it on top of what you're already doing, right? You're not going to eliminate what you're already doing because that's not possible. You can't actively do that. You're just going to start building on top. And you're going to start building it on top from understanding what the purpose of doubt is. What is the upside of doubt? Positive psychology. Look at the same situation that other people would look at and say, that's a problem that needs to be solved. And say, where is the opportunity in this? You understand that shift? That's what positive psychology is to me. So the purpose of doubt, cast positively, is that it is supposed to be an indicator that you're actually pushing your limits. Remember, it scales with ambition. Think about that for a second. A lot of people, when they feel doubtful, they go, oh no, you should be going, fuck yeah, right? But that oh no is fueled by your perception of it's a problem. It's going to limit me. But build on top of that. It's trying to limit you for a reason because you're pushing your limits. One of the things people ask me about optimism is how to do it realistically. So look at the above. The situation is the same. You're just looking at it from a different perspective. You don't have to change your analysis of the situation on the ground. Wow, like I got a lot of doubtful thoughts floating around. Just what side you're coming at it from. Change the judgment from, no, these doubts are going to destroy all my plans, to, wow, I must be doing something right to experience this. So now that we've established what the purpose of doubt is and gotten into sort of orientation to start building, let me talk about some concrete examples. I said I would give an example, some of them from working with athletes, some of them from my own life. First is a scenario that I witnessed recently coaching an athlete one-on-one. Can I just say, coaching people, the coolest thing about it is if you just give people the space to come up with their own processes, you don't spoon feed them, you know, do this, do this, do this, do this. They come up with something so much better than you could have ever come up with. Okay. And I say that I have full confidence in my expertise, but when I heard it, somebody I was coaching spitting this back at me, I was like, I'm so glad I didn't tell you exactly what to do. All right. So I was talking to an athlete, this athlete riding high, training's going great. Life is good. The sun is shining on him extra hard this particular week. Everything's great. Okay. When you're feeling good, just genuinely really awesome, you're not inclined to a lot of doubtful thinking, right? You're not prejudiced to be worrying a lot that the outcome that you want is unlikely to happen. It's actually really seductive. You can start to think almost unrealistically, optimistically, on an instinctual level. I'm going to do it. Or worse, for some of my really high achieving people, and in this case, this guy, I can make sure it happens. That's the dangerous thought. Because if you ride that instinct unchecked, basically what you do is you set your pole on one end of the extreme. And when the natural rhythm of life comes for you, right? Because not every week's going to be a week where the sun is shining and everything's amazing and my training's going amazing and I can conquer the world, right? So if you just let that go unchecked, swing all the way in that direction, when the natural rhythm of life comes for you, you're going to swing violently back to the other side. What's your thought track going to be? I'm not going to do it. It's all slipping away from me. There's nothing I can do. Okay? Circling the great toilet bowl of life, as I call it. Have you ever seen somebody completely unravel after their first race of many because it doesn't go to plan? Oftentimes that is an athlete that can look invincible, whether it be in practice or some other moment when everything's just right. And they're letting that stuff just like roll. And as coaches, we even want to, instinctually, we want to encourage it. Why wouldn't we want people to feel invisible and just, and if you could just ride that confidence right into the meet, it's dangerous. So what did he do? What did he learn to do? Learn to insert it intentionally when he's feeling good. And he's not raining all over his own parade. He's taken a moment and recognized this is a good moment. Right now, I'm having a good moment. And I will have bad moments too. He understood, took a moment to say intentionally, there's no way to make this last forever. There's no way to ensure, you know, like think about it, when you say like, I can ensure that this will happen. Well, then I need to sustain this perfect moment up until that point. And then you don't do that, right? Then you don't get the perfect moment. You take good moments for what they are. You know, you actually go like, yeah, feeling pretty good. I guess it's likely, this is the term he used, likely that what I want to happen will happen. Then your polar opposite won't be outright despair. Just a realistic, I'm in a bad moment right now, and this too shall pass. Just like the good times. That's an example with an athlete. Let me speak internally from a coaching perspective. I think the hallmark of any good coach, I like to think this about myself, is you have very high standards. Okay? You set the standard really high. I've never met a really successful coach that's lackadaisical about standards. I challenge you, like introduce me to one. They have a clear, almost obsessive, sometimes obsessive, vision of what the right way to do things are. And oftentimes, instinctually, they attempt to enforce that vision in a couple really unproductive ways. And just reframing their perspective around that vision can make a giant difference. Okay, so let's just like walk through the scenario. You have super high standards and you get like your standards by definition of being high, they're not easily achieved, right? So you're going to see stuff all the time as a coach, whoever you're coaching. Why would you not set your standard above what you're seeing in practice? You're always trying to move them to something better, right? So by nature, you will find yourself in situations where you experience stuff that is dissonant from what you want to see. So I'll use an example from my last coaching job. We had a practice that started at 8 o'clock. So what was my standard? At 8 o'clock, we had a pace clock that was all the way lined up. Okay. So at the 00, I wanted everybody to be swimming of 8 o'clock, 0.00. I wanted everybody to be in the water swimming. So what do I do? Or what do I feel? Let's start that. When a handful of people are chatting it up, slowly putting on their caps as the clock turns 8. I am hurt because my standard is not being met. What do I do with that hurt? I can transfer it to the athlete standing, right? I can go over and yell at everybody. Might motivate them in the moment to get in the water. But this is like deserves its whole other podcast. It actually makes it globally harder for me to influence them. Every time those moments where you sort of yell, intimidate, whatever, they work very, very locally, I would say, but they make it harder for you globally. Because people eventually tune you out or worse. Or like a non-productive thing I can do, I can sort of internalize it and incinerate myself. And the experience accumulates. And then when something goes wrong at a meet the next month or at the end of the season, I unravel. because I go, I should have known, I should have done something. We didn't practice to a high enough standard to make it happen at this meet. Okay. So in either situation, you're feeding this unproductive process. You're actually staying stuck in this unproductive process and not keying into the purpose of doubt, right? Which is that it scales with your ambition. That it's actually a sign, right? Even think back to the standards thing. Look at the perspective that I started with. You're going to be disappointed. You've actually intentionally put that into the system because you're putting your standards ahead of where everybody is. You wouldn't be disappointed if you just decided, well, what everybody's already doing is good enough. Then there's no room for disappointment. So you did that on purpose because you thought it was the right thing. So you need to ask yourself those kinds of questions to reframe it for yourself, not so that you won't be hurt in the situation, but so that you don't have a process that either involves you taking it out on your athletes or you taking it out on yourself. Okay? So you actually have a counter reaction to being hurt in that situation that turns it into a reinforcing moment for you over time. And, you know, here's some questions I ask myself. Are you proud that you want everyone to start on time? Heck yeah. I think that's part of what makes me a good coach. Okay. On teams I coach, I get people to use the practice time. What does it say about you that you're upset when it doesn't happen? It says that I have high standards and I'm setting them appropriately ahead of the people that I'm coaching and trying to push them to get better. Look at it neutrally. Do you think you're helping athletes by asking them to get in? Would they be better off following your advice? Of course, they'd be better off following my advice. So I got to keep pushing because it's the right thing for everybody. Now, you may have unproductive answers to any of the questions I asked. I can't predict all the branching possibilities, but the goal is to shift your perspective from extreme focus on a problem to a broad view of what you're doing. That's positive psychology. Most people who are trying to do something to a high standard, they can really toxically torture themselves with what is out of place rather than marking their own progress towards a more perfect vision. That's all for this week, folks. I'm going to release this one early as I'll be on vacation next week. Hoping to come back with some more guests. As usual, swimbriefpodcast@gmail.com, christycoach.com. Fill out a contact form, christy_coach on Instagram. And please check out Pro Swim Workouts. They have done so much to keep this podcast going over the years. I can't stress for you enough how much I appreciate Pro Swim Workouts. We're 200 plus episodes and going strong. Do this mostly on my own time. So I mean it, guys. I really appreciate the support of Pro Swim Workouts. And if you want to get some inspiration for your next workout, head over there, give them a look. If you want to get a membership, use the code CDSwimCoach. You'll get a discount and you'll support this podcast even more. See y'all next week.